And thank you very much for this kind invitation. And even though this conference is more on transcendental number theory, I would be talking a little on algebraic aspects, essentially because this is the problem which I have been thinking in the recent past to as a PhD problem for one of my students. Yeah, this is one of the problems which I have been thinking in the recent past with one of my PhD students, and therefore I thought this is one problem which I will be talking about. And this is a problem, the one connection with transcendental number theory is that this is a problem on Diophantine equations, and in some sense the very first major result in this problem came through transcendental number theory. And this problem has been solved completely in Q, and we were trying to see how these arguments will go through in a number field like QI. And for some of the audience, I will probably, this may be new, therefore I will just explain what happened in Q, what we get in school's work, and try to explain what is the problems which you are facing when you are doing QI. Okay, therefore the problem is simply the following. Solve this equation. This is the so-called Catalan's conjecture. Solve this equation, x power m minus y power n is equal to 1. And there is one obvious solution one can write. There is one obvious solution one can write, and the question is, are there any non-obvious solutions? And the conjecture is essentially that there are no other solutions. The 3 cubed minus 2 square equal to 3 square minus 2 cubed equal to 1 is the only solutions. First of all, let me make certain observations. One can assume that m and n are primes. This is a standard thing. And and we will also assume that m is a prime p which is bigger than or equal to 3, and n is a prime q which is bigger than or equal to 3. Therefore, the case of m equal to 2 and n equal to 2 can be directly handled. I mean, it's not that easy, but it can be handled. And there is a second observation. The third observation is that you can assume, if x and y I don't assume to be natural numbers but integers, then I can of course assume that my p is bigger than q by interchanging the roles, by making x to minus x and y to minus y, interchanging the roles, I can assume p is bigger than q. Therefore, the situation is that this is this equation, x power p minus y power q equal to 1. And then we want to know whether there are more solutions. And let's say the introduction. And any progress in this particular problem starts with the certain theorems of Cassell's. I mean, even all the later developments actually are starting with this theorems of Cassell's, and therefore let me state the theorems and then try to prove that, because these are the things which we have sort of reasonably finished as far as this QI are concerned, and therefore we will see what happens in Q case. The first theorem is that given this equation, then under star Q divides X. If x power p minus y power q equal to 1, then q divides x. Therefore, let's prove this theorem. And the proof is, this proof is not too difficult. Let's see. First of all, let's make some elementary observations. The first elementary observation is that p square never divides x power p minus 1 divided by x minus 1. The idea of the proof is that if p square divides x power p minus 1, for example, that means p divides x power p minus 1. Therefore, x power p is equal to 1 modulo p. But on the other hand, by Fermat's little theorem, x is equal to 1 modulo p. And therefore, x will look like 1 plus k times p power alpha with k and p co-prime. And then choose such an x and check what happens to x power p minus 1 divided by x minus 1. Then you will see that if only p will divide and p square will never divide. The second elementary observation is that the GCD of x power p minus 1 divided by x minus 1 and x minus 1, this GCD is equal to 1 or p. Again, because if something divides x minus 1, therefore x is equal to 1 modulo q, and if x is equal to 1 modulo q, and then put it in x power p minus 1 by x minus 1, and then you will get that this divides 1 or p. Okay, therefore, so far we have observed that p square does not divide x power p minus 1 by x minus 1, and the GCD of x p by x minus 1 and x power p minus 1 by x minus 1 equal to 1 or p. And of course, with a similar reasoning, we can prove that p square does not divide y power q plus 1 divided by y plus 1, and y plus 1 into y power q plus 1 divided by y plus 1. Equal to 1 or q. And then now suppose q square does not divide y power q plus 1 divided by y plus 1 and y plus 1 into y power q plus 1 by y plus 1 equal to 1 or q. Yeah, now let us assume that let's write x power p is equal to y power q plus 1, which is equal to y power q plus 1 divided by y plus 1 into y plus 1. The right hand side can have a GCD x only 1 or q. Therefore, now suppose let us assume that q does not divide x. And try to get a contradiction. If q does not divide x, then these two are co-prime. And that essentially means that y plus 1 has to be a power of p. And substitute it here. Therefore, x power p is equal to b power p minus 1 raised to the power q plus 1. This tells you, roughly speaking, x is equal to b power q. And therefore, in fact, you can say that x power p is equal to b power pq into 1 plus o of b power minus p into q. You can write that now take the pth roots. This would essentially give that x minus b power q. That's better right here. This would give me that x is equal to b power q into 1 plus o of q power minus p, b q into b power minus p, which is equal to b power q into 1 plus o of q into b power q minus p. The reason why I gave this particular argument is that this error term is little of one is what I want to say. And remember, I have already assumed that my P is bigger than Q, and therefore my Q minus P is negative, and therefore the error term is little O of 1. And now, since the error term is little O of 1, so this is 1 over Q. Therefore, x is equal to b power q, because x and b power q are integers. Therefore, x is equal to b power q plus little o of 1, and then you can get a contradiction. Okay, the reason why I give this thing is essentially I am using the fact that p is bigger than q. Therefore, I cannot say that by symmetry the other one follows, because in by symmetry I cannot also assume that q is bigger than p and get something. And therefore, that's a little problem. No, I take this b power p power q, therefore I take the p th root will give you a q over p here, therefore there will be a q over p, and p is also less than 1, p is bigger than q, therefore I am getting advantage from both places, that there is a q over p and there is also a b power p q minus p. Okay, I mean this argument now can be made as strengthened, and even for p bigger than or equal to 3, it works. I mean you have to just use the argument clearly. And therefore now I cannot immediately say that by symmetry the other one will work, because now therefore I have to be careful. But in any case, let me... Therefore, it follows that Q divides X. Yes. Therefore, it follows that Q divides X to start with, and also X power P, X Y power Q plus 1 divided by Y plus 1, the GCD is precisely is equal to Q. And but on the other hand, this product is a power of p. And therefore, except for q, these two factors are coprime to each other. And therefore, except for q, each one has to be a pth power. Therefore, I get y plus 1 is equal to a power of p. I mean, of course, except for a q, and y power q plus 1 divided by y plus 1. Has to be a power of p except for some q, and then x should be equal to something. We'll come. Okay, the power of q, again the q has to appear, and the fact is that q square cannot appear here, because we have already seen that q square cannot divide this element, and therefore q has to appear here, and q power p minus 1 has to appear here, which will make it less. X is equal to q times b times u. Here, yeah. The product has to be a pth power, and here no power other, only first power can come, and first power has to come, and since the first power has to come, and the product is a pth power, therefore the power is only p minus 1. Okay, so far so good. And now the second observation by Castle is that this already implies that x is reasonably large. Okay, why does it explain x is reasonably large? Now let us look at this y power q plus 1 by y plus 1, and I want to read it modulo q y plus 1. If I take y power q plus 1 by y plus 1 and read it modulo y plus 1, then I want to know what is that I will get. Therefore, to make life simpler, let's put y plus 1 equal to v, so that I get v minus 1 raised to the power q plus 1 divided by v, which I am reading modulo v. If I now take v minus 1 power q plus 1 divided by v, it's reading modulo v, and I now take the binary expansion, practically all the earlier coefficients would be divisible by v, and therefore will be 0 mod v, in fact, after divisible by v, and therefore that won't make a thing at all. and therefore the only thing which will finally remain is q times minus 1 power q minus 1 times v minus 1. These are the last two terms which will remain from the binomial coefficient, and then you add a 1 divided by v, and this is precisely q plus 1. This 1 cancels, and v is therefore this also cancels, and therefore it is q. It is no. It is modulo y plus 1 is modulo y plus 1 is v is what I am okay. The v is what I am forgetting, and therefore I should get actually q of q plus 1. Q for v plus 1. So congruent to q. Therefore, y power q plus 1 by y plus 1 is congruent to q modulo y plus 1. And now this y power q plus 1 by y plus 1, we write as q times u power p, coming from that, is congruent to q modulo, the y plus 1 has a p power p in it, no, q power p minus 1 in it, which you put. Therefore, q, because y plus 1 has a q power p minus 1 in it, you put, therefore q into u power p is equal to q modulo q power p minus 1. Which implies in particular that u power p is congruent to 1 modulo q power p minus 2. And now you see the p is coprime to the order of the group. Since p is coprime to the order of the group and u power p is identity, this would imply that u itself is identity modulo the group. P is bigger than Q and P is bigger than Q minus 1, and therefore this implies essentially that the cardinality of U is bigger than Q power P minus 2, and since cardinality of and therefore cardinality of X itself is bigger than Q power P minus 2. Therefore the very fact that q divides x already would imply that q is extremely large. Okay. And now the third observation. These are observations shown we did. That exactly the other one is also correct. Namely p divides y. Okay, and when of course I cannot give that simple argument which I gave it the first time, which was purely depending upon the fact that P is bigger than Q, and therefore now what happens is now we argue little differently, and suppose not, and then again you write y power Q is equal to x power P minus 1 by x minus 1 into x minus 1. And suppose it is not, then x power P minus 1 by x minus 1 is a power of x minus 1 is a power of q. And that you substitute in the original equation, x power p minus y power q equal to 1. You get b power q plus 1 raised to the power p minus y power q is equal to 1. This would essentially mean for all practical purposes y power q is essentially b power q plus 1 raised to the power p, which is b power qp into 1 plus b power minus q raised to the power p. And then you can take the qth root, therefore y is equal to b power p into 1 plus b power minus q raised to the power p over q. And now this I essentially earlier approximated by the first term 1, and therefore I said y is equal to around b power p, but on the other hand the error will not be very small. Okay, but what you do is it's not too difficult. Now what you can do is essentially you take a b power p and take the binomial expansion, p by q choose j, then b power minus qj, and now you take only up to j up to m, and then take j bigger than m, And then you say that essentially y is approximated by this, this is an error term, and therefore consequently they have to be equal, and then you get a contradiction by proving that this number is non-negative, this number is non-zero. But this particular argument will not immediately work. This particular argument will not immediately work essentially because this main term is not an integer, because this binomial coefficient p by q over j is of course will have a lot of powers of q sitting in the denominator, and in fact the powers of q sitting in the denominator will be q power m and also a q power j, where q power j exactly divide m factorial. Because when you write this p power q, etc., the power of q will not cancel in the denominator, but everything else will cancel, and therefore that is a denominator. Now choose that denominator and multiply. And then everything becomes, the main term has become an integer. And then after multiplication, then you have to prove that this number is less than 1. Which happens, and therefore that number is non-zero and it's less than 1, but the left hand side is an integer and the right hand side the main term is an integer, and that gives you a contradiction. That gives you a contradiction essentially because in order to get this contradiction, you see we have a negative powers of b. Okay, therefore I need this negative powers of b essentially, and therefore I have to choose my m in such a way that it is the fractional part of p over q or p over q plus 1, etc. And therefore that is a choice of one which one makes. Therefore, whatever gain that you want to get should come from b, because the whole gain essentially comes because that you have a negative powers of b, and if b is large enough, then you get that thing. And b is large enough essentially because b is defined like that, and your x is already bigger, that's why I proved that x is bigger, and therefore b power q is bigger than q power p minus 2. And therefore your b is bigger than q power p minus q. And that lower bound is good enough for you to prove that the error term is actually less than 1. And since the error term is less than 1, then equality. Okay, so far so good. Now let us see what happens if you... Okay, now let me say a few things. And therefore, now since p divides y, and therefore this y power q is equal to x power p minus 1 by divided by x minus 1 into x minus 1, and therefore x minus 1 is also a power of a qth power, except for a p which is floating around. And x power p minus 1 by x minus 1 is also a qth power except for a p. And y would be p times a times b. Therefore, in any solutions, your x, y, etc. are in a specific way rather than general integers. Okay? And the very fact that they are in a specific way essentially makes one to use the linear forms and logarithms, and that is precisely what Tideman did. That you have your x, y, etc. is in a specific form, and therefore amenable to linear forms and logarithms. And when you do this linear forms and logarithms, so here you are able to get a contradiction. We get a contradiction except for the fact that as usually in transcendental number theory, of course he has to assume that x, y, p, q, the maximum of x, y, p, q is bigger than equal to some astronomically big constant, and only then of course the linear forms will work.
It's a linear form in two
logarithms.
Now, since then there
have
been improvements on the...
Yeah, but on the other hand the constants are... Very large. I think probably Professor Waltzman will be able to say that in the original proof, what is the best constant that is? Which one? Yeah, you need not use me. It's more algebraic number theory.
No,
yeah.
No, no, that's sort of still just as an academic. It's 100 years away instead of 1,000. It was quite an age. It was quite an age. Not that far. My focus in that was the true logger. The true logger was different from this, but the true logger was
Now I'll see what. Okay, therefore, first of all, okay, and Mayolus-Kruse proof also, of course, starts with this Kessel's criteria, which is essentially that Q divides X and P divides Y, and therefore they are in a specific form. Okay, and the bound on X, which is the lower bound which I got, is not used later, but on the other hand, that I bound, I need essentially to prove that because, you know, the first term alone will not approximate it. I have to use the binomial theorem to essentially prove that the first m terms will approximate it, and then I have to multiply, and then the saving essentially comes from the fact that b is large enough, and b is large enough would only come from the fact that x is large enough. Okay. And now, therefore, we want to see what happens to, okay. The following things again are proved even in Qi, for example. Let's take the simplest case of Qi. In Qi, again, you can prove that x power p minus 1 by x minus 1 times x minus 1, that GCD is a divisor of P. Okay, the same proof which we gave earlier. Except that now, therefore, from the earlier, we can, for example, if P splits, then from the earlier we concluded therefore this is 1 RP, and now you can only conclude that this is 1 pi pi bar RP. And there are examples where any of those funny things can happen to start with. And similarly for y power q. And once you have that, and therefore, and now this 1 again can be ruled out exactly by the way it was done earlier. And if this P happens, then exactly the same proof works. There's really no problem. The problem essentially would be only if the GCD happens to be either pi or pi bar. If the GCD happens to be either pi or pi bar, now let's see the earlier proof which we had. The earlier proof we had that y power q plus 1 divided by y plus 1 is congruent to q modulo y. Okay. Therefore, now, then what would happen is that if you have y power q plus 1 divided by y plus 1 into y plus 1 is equal to x power p, and therefore each one is a pth power, except for a pi floating along. I mean, if it's not p, suppose the GCD is pi, then except for the pi floating around, everyone is a pth power, and then pi will divide only to the first power here, and then this will give you pi power p minus 1. That's how it will look like, and your x will be, of course, pi times a times p. Yeah. Yeah, no, that one I can absorb in the A.
Oh,
since I have a A, I can always absorb. Yes. Yeah, A, B, etc. are in Gaussian things. And therefore it can be just pi power p minus 1 into, and pi power, A and B I can absorb. And then, as we proved earlier, we can also prove that y power q plus 1 is equal to, by y plus 1 is equal to q modulo y plus 1, which is the same argument which we had earlier. I am now arguing with q, for example, yes. Okay, and now this y power q plus 1, of course, I substitute there, pi p power b is congruent to Q is pi pi bar modulo y plus 1, which is pi power t minus 1. Okay, and now this pi cancels, therefore b power p is equal to pi bar modulo pi power p minus 1, and in the earlier case we had b power p is equal to 1 modulo pi power pi minus 1. No, no, I mean, I'm just saying. Okay, wait. No, no, see, this is what I'm using. Okay, and this pi is actually a divisor of. Okay, let's just put it this way. X power p is equal to y power q plus 1 by y plus 1. Okay, and this GCD is a divisor of q.
Yeah.
And this GCD divisor of q. Therefore, it can be either 1, q or any other divisor of q. And therefore, in particular, if q is equal to pi pi bar, then this GCD can be either 1 or pi or pi bar or. And therefore, except for pi, then everything, both will be a pth power. And the pi will appear, that one can prove. Therefore, the GCD cannot be 1 exactly by the same argument which we had earlier. Since the GCD cannot be 1 by an argument which we had earlier, therefore there will be pith powers, and then there will be a pi which is floating around.
So this notation is not the same.
This notation is not the same, sorry. Okay? And then, of course, then we have y power q plus 1 by y plus 1 is congruent to q modulo y plus 1, which is again exactly as we proved earlier. And this proof will work without much problem. And this y power q plus 1 by y plus 1 I put as pi times b power p. And this is equal to q is pi pi prime modulo y plus 1, therefore pi power p minus 1. Okay? And the pi cancels, and then you end up with b power p is congruent to pi bar modulo pi power p minus 1. Sorry? Okay?
P minus 2.
But what we had earlier in the q case was b power p is equal to 1 mod p, pi power p minus q power p minus 2. And once we had b power p equal to 1 mod q power p minus 2, then we said that this p and the order of the groups are. P does not divide the order of the group. And from the fact that if p does not divide the order of the group, we immediately deduce that b is congruent to 1 modulo q power p minus 2, which gives a lower bound for b immediately. But on the other hand, if you have something like a b power p is equal to pi bar modulo pi power p minus 2, then because ultimately I need a lower bound for b, and this lower bound for b will give me a lower bound for x, and that lower bound for x is needed for the other case, because in the binomial theorem when you use it, I have to prove that the tail is small, and the tail is small is something which I can prove only when x is big enough. Changing the notation, this is precisely what I want. In this notation, I want the b to be large. If b to be large means f has to be large. If f has to be large, therefore b has to be large. And if b is large, then I can prove that the tail is small. Okay? And of course, we proved that b is bigger than q power p over q. But theoretically, one doesn't even need that big. You know, for example, because you see, you will have a b power q here. B power q kills this, then it's more or less sufficient. And even a weaker result like a b power q is bigger than or equal to q power p minus q is sufficient. But in any case, I need a lower bound for x. And since I need a lower bound for x, I should be having a lower bound for b. And a lower bound for b was essentially automatic in the earlier case. But now you are having a condition like a b power p is equal to pi bar modulo pi power p minus 2. And that would make life a little more difficult. To really get some lower bound for B and then get the Castle's criteria. And if you don't have the Castle's criteria, I mean there's no second step at all. I mean everything essentially follows from the Castle's criteria. Okay, therefore already this is one problem which one has to handle. That's what I had here. Sorry? No, it is not symmetric in the sense that B par P. Yeah, then B par P, yes, that is true. Something, some similar ideas to do, work. Yeah. Okay. Now, therefore this is first step. And now probably, I would explain what is Mihailescu's ideas in the case of Q, and then see how it extends for QI. It's a problem. Therefore, now let's look at this Mihailescu's idea first. Okay, therefore, what is the situation we are in? We are in the situation that x power p minus y power q is equal to 1, and I already know that q divides x, and therefore now y power q is equal to x power p minus 1, and now I take this extension k, which is q zeta p, my zeta will stand for zeta p, and therefore this is nothing but a product x minus zeta, x minus, let me write x minus sigma zeta, sigma in the Galois group. And now one can say that each one of these elements is a qth power, and then we should be able to do something. But there will be qth power essentially. But there will not be qth power of a principal ideal. There will be qth power of an ideal. This is the same problem which one has, Kummer had versus Fermat's. You see, now, therefore it may not be a, therefore this x minus sigma zeta is a qth power of an ideal A, which need not be principal. And therefore now one would like to of course make it into a principal ideal. And one easy way of making something like that into a principal ideal is to rise to the power h, which is a class number which makes life a little difficult in our case. And therefore we are planning to make it into a principal ideal by a different technique. See, the different technique which we plan to use, okay, now let's start with a simple example. You can just simply take the norm from k to q. When you take the norm from k to q, then for example it will put you under q, and therefore it will put you under z, and z is a PID, and that will make a principal ideal. But you know, we don't want to take the norm, of course, but we want to essentially use that idea. Okay, what is it? Therefore, for this norm, we want to give a slightly different interpretation. Therefore, now let G be the Galois group of K over Q. And then if sigma is in G, then sigma acts on the ideals. Okay, by the usual way. And since sigma acts on the ideal, the group ring ZG also acts on the ideals. And now ZG acts on the ideals, and the norm is an element of ZG. which is actually given by norm is equal to sigma 1 plus sigma 2 plus etc. sigma, okay, what is the degree? P minus 1. Okay, this is the action. Okay, and in other words, suppose you have an ideal A and the action of sigma is equal to sigma of A, which we will also denote by A power sigma. Therefore, that is an ideal and this is the action. And then we have found out, therefore, this norm is therefore one element which takes an ideal to a principal ideal. This is one element which takes an ideal into principal ideals, but this may not be the only element. There may be a lot of elements which would of course take an ideal to principal ideals, and therefore I can apply that one of those elements to this x minus zeta and make it as a principal ideal and then start acting on that. Okay, and now that's the theorem that theta I is equal to summation I A by P sigma A inverse, A is equal to 1 to P minus 1, and then let S be the ideal generated by this theta I. This is called as Stickelberger. Then this F fills the class group. Therefore, we have got some other element which actually kills the class group, and therefore I can take any one of the Stickelberger element and then apply it and then get the principal ideals, and then I will have a Qth power and then I can argue with that Qth power. Okay, now I can do something some more also. What is that I can do? One can define an abstraction group, something like a silver group. Let me define that. This abstraction group is those elements which are in Q zeta P star, such that order of alpha for any ideal tau is 0 modulo Q, except for tau is equal to P, which I will define in a minute. And then you take a Q zeta P star power Q. Okay, this P. Okay, now again we will go to the same thing. Q, this is K, this is Q zeta P. And with this extension has only one ramified prime, and namely P itself is the only ramified prime. And that this prime gives you P power P minus 1, and that P is what I am talking here. Oh, tau not equal to P. Therefore, except for that, over that prime, it should be a Qth power. That is precisely what would happen when you write your x minus zeta, because the x minus zeta, their left hand side is a Qth power. Therefore, except for that particular prime, it will be a Qth power. And yeah, therefore this P is actually 1 minus zeta. Okay. Now the first text observation is that if you have this x power P minus y power Q is equal to 1, and then if you take this element x minus zeta, this element x minus zeta actually belongs to the abstraction group. This x minus zeta belongs to the abstraction group, that is not very difficult, because then you write x power p by y power q is equal to x power p minus 1, which is product x minus zeta, x minus sigma zeta over sigma, that's what we have written. Therefore, this and the any two x minus sigma zeta can have only 1 minus zeta as a common factor by the standard arguments. Okay, since any two x minus sigma theta has only 1 minus theta as a common factor, therefore except for 1 minus theta, then it has to be a qth power for every other q. And that is precisely what this particular statement says. Therefore, this element x minus theta, which is an element here, is an element which is of order q except for that particular factor. Therefore, this element belongs to H. And now, of course, now using these two ideas is what essentially he completes the proof. And therefore, to start with, okay. Now let us give just one more thing of what he is able to prove in this connection. Now I want to know a little more about the Selmer group. Therefore, now we take an alpha. This alpha is equal to, therefore, which will look like an a power q times p power k. Therefore, except for the prime p, it will be a qth power. And then I want to look at this particular map, alpha going to a. This map alpha going to A, I want to look at as a map from this Selmer, this abstraction group to the class group of A. The class group of K. Therefore, I take the A and I view it as an element in the class group. And in fact, I do a little more. I define the class group Q of K consisting of those ideals whose Qth power is an identity. That's where I am mapping. Okay? Yeah, first of all, I should say that this is a well-defined map. The reason why this is a well-defined map is that, first of all, elements of H are defined only modulo qth powers of the element of Q state star, and therefore, if the same alpha will also be equal to some A beta power Q times P power K for some beta. But then on the other hand, this will go to A and this will go to A beta, but it doesn't really matter in the class group, whether it goes to A or A beta, it doesn't matter. And also you can see that in this particular element alpha can also be written as A over P power Q, P power K plus Q. If I write like that, then it will go to A over P. But even that doesn't really matter because this P is again a principal ideal generated by 1 over Q. And therefore, as far as the class group is concerned, there is no problem. And also, I take this alpha. This alpha is identity in the class group. P is a principal ideal. Therefore, this P power K is also an identity in the class group. And therefore, A power Q is also an identity in the class group, and therefore, it will really go to the class of Q. And then one proves that it is a surjective map, and one looks at the kernel. The kernel is actually the set of units of Q zeta P 1 over P. Theta p 1 over p. Because the units will of course go to the things, but on the other hand, of course, the 1 minus theta is somewhat floating around, therefore there will be 1 over p, and therefore that will be the kernel, and therefore that is this exact sequence which you have. Now I want to say something about this H. First of all, remember that this Sickelberger ideal kills this. And if I can find out something which kills this, then combining I can get something which kills H itself. And then I can use that idea. Therefore, the Sickelberger ideal kills this, and therefore I need something to be killing this. Now I make the observation that if I is a complex conjugation viewed as an element of set G, then 1 minus I kills. Therefore, I want to say 1 minus I kills EP by EP power Q. The reason why 1 minus I kills EP by E power Q is that if I take a unit epsilon and then act 1 minus I on that epsilon, I will get epsilon by epsilon bar, which by standard arguments is a root of unity, and the groups of unity in this case is Z2 cross Zp generated by this plus or minus 1 and zeta in the case of Q, and therefore Q is coprime to the order of the group. Since Q is coprime to the order of the group, therefore any root of unity is a qth power. So the group of unity is at that order. Therefore, any root of unity is a qth power, and therefore, since I am now looking at EP over EP power Q, therefore that is get killed. And for the same reason, 1 minus zeta is also killed, because this is 1 minus zeta by 1 minus zeta power, which also happens to be the root of unity. Therefore, 1 minus zeta is killed and the units of K are killed. Therefore, essentially 1 minus I kills this. Therefore, S delta, now if I define S delta to be 1 minus I times S, where S is in this abstraction group, then this S delta kills this, S delta kills that, and therefore S delta kills H. And therefore we have this, some idea about this group. Therefore, it is S delta kills it. And now, okay, to this, I will say what these ideas would lead to and then what it thinks in QI. For example, one can prove the following theorem, that earlier we proved Q divides X. One can prove that Q square divides X just by using these ideas. No. First, this one, I have to still define the, we are now defining this, this particular part is okay, and now we have to define the annihilator there. Oh yeah, therefore, since I don't have much time, let me say this. Therefore, what is the situation now we are in? We are now in the situation QI, and over QI, of course, I add now zeta p. This is Q to Q zeta p. And now this actually is exactly is equal to Q zeta 4p. And now I have this Q zeta 4p. And now what I want, and I am taking this particular Galois group. Okay. And then I am now looking at this ring, which is and this ring, I have to find out something which kills the corresponding class group. Okay? And once I have that, now I have this 1 minus I. And therefore, if I can now do this annihilator, okay, therefore I know this annihilator of H. And once I know the annihilator of H, I can sort of do everything. Okay? Which is precisely what we are sort of think, I have not started even writing, but it looks like that we are somewhere there, but it looks like we are somewhere there, and this annihilator essentially seems to be the restrictions of the annihilator for the full thing, the corresponding Spiegelberger. Therefore, you can take that annihilator. You see, first of all, even outside the annihilators, you can essentially even outside the Spiegelberger, you can write many annihilators. You know, that's a Stein's theorem which would help you to do that. That in order to see whether something kills the L part of the class group, you have to only look at whether it kills the L part of the cyclotomic units model, the units model of cyclotomic units, which is somewhat easy to check. And therefore, you will be able to write some annihilators, and then you can do this. And that's Okay, that we have sort of got it, but now only once you start writing it, you will see whether there is a gap here and there which you have to fill up. Okay, therefore now let me give you an idea to say that this approach is rather powerful by just proving Q square divided here. Okay, see, for example, you can now take a theta in S bar such that this theta viewed in FQG is non-zero. One of the easiest things is you can take theta to be 1 minus I times theta 2, where the theta I's are defined here somewhere. Okay, theta I is just a thing, but summation ai by p sigma a inverse a equal to 1 to p minus 1. Never take this theta. This restricted to FQG, because this theta will have coefficients only plus or minus 1. Since this coefficient has only plus or minus 1, it doesn't restrict. This does not really restrict to FQG2, it is a non-zero thing. And now what you can do is, now you have already your x minus theta, and you know that this x minus theta is killed. Therefore, this is principle. By multiplying by an appropriate thing, therefore you get this is principle, because this is obtained by this by only multiplying by minus zeta inverse or so on and so forth, and it's minus zeta inverse is again a huge power, and therefore there's no problem. Therefore this is a principal ideal. Now this is a principal ideal that, and it's a huge power. No, because anyway you know x minus zeta is a huge power, and therefore 1 minus theta bar x is a huge power, but then applying the theta, you are only making it a principle. Therefore, now what is the situation you are in? Therefore, the situation you are in is that 1 minus theta bar x power theta is a power of q. But you know, by Cassell's criteria, you know x is equal to 0 modulo q. Therefore, you get 1 congruent to beta power q modulo q. Okay, now this is an easy exercise, that if you are given that a power q is congruent to b power q modulo q, then you get a power q is equal to b power q modulo q square for free. The two q powers are congruent to 0 modulo q, then you get mod q square for free. And therefore, since both are q powers, therefore you get this for free. And therefore, you get 1 minus zeta bar x power theta is congruent to 1 modulo q square. Now, I can take the binomial expansion. Let's say theta is equal to summation n sigma sigma. Then x is, remember, is q divides x. And therefore, in the binomial expansion, x square, etc. will not matter. Only x term will matter. Therefore, you will get 1 minus summation n sigma sigma zeta bar x is congruent to 1 modulo q square. And the 1 cancels, this is 0 modulo q square. And sigma zeta is a basis for k over q. Okay, and therefore, this means that either x is equal to 0 mod q square or summation n sigma sigma zeta bar equal to 0 mod q. In the second case, sigma zeta bar is a basis modulo, part of k over q, and therefore this happens if n sigma has to be 0 modulo q for every sigma, but on the other hand I have chosen the theta which is not reducing to 0 in a q of g, and therefore this case doesn't arise. Therefore, the fact that x is equal to 0 modulo q square seems to appear just like that, you know, without doing much work. And therefore, in some sense, essentially, if you can actually do this abstraction group properly, and then you can do this annihilators, then everything else seems to be essentially there. It's mostly the question of making the correct definition and essentially working on the details. Okay, therefore, that seems to goes on back.